As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone, and this is Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Well, the season marched serenely on last night with a comfortable 3-0 win over Bodo Glimt in the Europa League. We'll talk about that game as well as look forward to a titanic struggle against Liverpool at the Emirates on Sunday. Joined this week, I am by Adrian Clarke and Art De Roche. Morning.
Morning, Stoney.
Morning.
Nice to see you. Things are going very, very nicely. Hopefully another happy podcast. I should talk about Sean Janelle, who is an Arsenal fan from Denver in the US, who tweeted us last week. He said, just listen to the pod. He said, I've only been to one Arsenal match in my life, last week's North London derby. It's possible, Sean, you'll never top that. But anyway, we hope you will, obviously, later in the year. He said it exceeded expectations. I'm happy to hear it wasn't just subjectively amazing, but objectively so, with the buzz of the crowd and result. I'm still buzzing. So, we were wondering if you could pick one game to be your first experience of watching the Arsenal live. What game are you picking? Now, I suppose we could have past or future games, really. I don't really mind, to be honest. Art, what game are you picking?
Well, unfortunately for me, unlike you guys, I never really got to experience Highbury. So my one's going to have to come there. And I think it's quite coincidental against Liverpool. I think... I had to pick, obviously, the Invincibles era to see Thierry Henry, and I went for the 4-2 win over Liverpool at Highbury because I thought just the drama that was in that game and also the fact that he scored a hat-trick, I think that probably would have been the perfect way to start things off. But I can only dream about that now. I can't actually do it.
That was intense, wasn't it? Adrian, were you there for that?
I wasn't, but it's one of my favourite games ever, no doubt about it, because of the circumstance as much as everything, because Arsenal were falling apart. It was all beginning to collapse, a sensational season, and the pressure was on. And for Thierry to turn in such a masterful performance after we'd gone behind, by the way, in that game, was just incredible. And yeah, there was real euphoria, you know that.
It was, yeah. It was. I mean, Thierry Henry has talked quite a lot about that game and Amy and myself on this podcast. And because, as you said, I mean, falling apart is a strong word, yeah. But we'd gone out of the Champions League to Chelsea, we'd gone out of the FA Cup to Manchester United, and then suddenly we're 2-1 down to Liverpool at half time, and then Thierry does what he does. It was fantastic. It really was. So, yeah, that would be a good one. Although, I think it almost might be a bit too much for your newbie, to be honest, because I think they'd be slightly scared of something like that. What about you, Adrian? What are you going for?
Yeah, that was definitely on my shortlist, but I've gone with another North London derby, 2012. 2-0 down to Spurs, another penalty, another dive, Gareth Bale this time. And then we roar back, don't we, to win 5-2. That was sensational with Sanya. Great header, Van Persie, brilliant turn and curler into the corner, 2 apiece at half time. And then, wow, second half, we absolutely annihilated Spurs, and it was sort of Theo Walcott and Rosicki and Van Persie just flying at them, and there were some great goals, and the momentum and the noise inside that stadium was amazing. So yeah, that would be a good opener, I think, just to go through the whole emotional journey as well in one game.
Another emotional one, wasn't it? And by the way, when Adrian is talking about that 5-2, he's not talking about the other 5-2. Because there were a couple, weren't there? So just, you know, I would take either, to be honest with you, but that one, certainly, when Rosicki scored to go 3-2 up, wasn't it?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then Theo got that last one. And the noise was sensational. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, honestly, I'm going back to Highbury as well. I remember a game against Shakhtar Donetsk, and I've talked about this on here, when we were 2-0 down, and Martin Keown got two in that game, including the winner in the last minute, and I've never heard anything like it.
Kanu, one more trip maybe. Kanu, Keown! It's a real Arsenal man at the real home of Arsenal, round for Arsenal. Martin Keown, a minute and a half into stoppage time, 2-0 down, 3-2 up.
I went home and I said it was the crowd that made the difference. And honestly, my missus looked at me like it's the most pathetic thing I'd ever said in my life. And then about half an hour later, we watched the highlights. I say we watched the highlights. They were on. My missus was in the lounge. She had no choice but to watch the highlights. And at the end of the game, Martin Keown said it was the crowd that did it. And I turned to her and went, see, it was me. I was involved in that. And she still thinks I'm an idiot, but what can you do? That one. And I also, I'm going to go for a future game as well.
I am.
When we win a semi-final of the Champions League in a couple of years at the Emirates. I'm not taking a final. I'm taking a home game.
Who are we beating?
Do you know what? I'd like to say Tottenham, but I actually don't think my heart could take that, to be honest with you. A two-legged game against Spurs in the semi-final of the Champions League. Because let's be fair, Spurs won't be in the Champions League if they keep playing the football they're playing.
Not realistic.
But, you know, something like that. Granit Xhaka leading us to glory, I think, is how I picture it in my head. Because we were talking about his redemption. Anyway, Sean, thanks for your tweet. And what an amazing game. To start, yeah, you really saw the Emirates at its very best. Last night, I didn't go last night. Did you guys go, by the way? Were you there?
Yes,
we did. We're not fair weather fans like yourself.
Stop it. I was doing, do you know what? I was doing an award ceremony, all right, for PR people. But anyway, I was sort of sneaking views of the game. Arsenal 3, Bodo Glimt 0. Can we talk first about Eddie Nketiah? Adrian, we've seen and we've talked on this pod about Eddie Nketiah and how he has risen to the challenge, because it started really Eddie's rebirth, if you like, before Gabriel Jesus got to the club. You know, we talked about how last season, those games at the end of the season, that's what won him the contract. But since Jesus has turned up, I think he's gone to another level. And last night, He really was. He was the catalyst, was he not? Or him and maybe Vieira as well. But Eddie has really taken a number of steps forward, I think.
Yeah, I think he was definitely our best player in the first half. Maybe not over the course of the whole game, but he was excellent. I talked about it on the breakdown live afterwards. I said he looks bigger, and that comes out of confidence. He's standing taller. He's got more of a presence about him on the pitch. And I also mentioned how alike he looks to Gabriel Jesus in terms of his play, his movement, the runs, the turns, the slipperiness of his all-round game mimics really what we see from Gabriel Jesus at the weekend. So part of it, I think he's learned a bit from the Brazilian, but most of it is down to just belief and confidence. And it's rocketed since, obviously, he started to get picked ahead of Lacazette towards the end of last season. I think that was a real boost to him. And because he delivered then, he's just kept on delivering. It's brilliant to see. Because hand on heart, I didn't see him developing into the player we're now watching. I thought, for the sake of his career, he'd probably be better off elsewhere. But now he looks Arsenal level now, and he's absolutely a worthy understudy to Gabriel Jesus. So yeah, all power to Eddie Nketiah. And that finish from the rebound, I was right behind it. He made it look so easy. I mean, it pinged off the post, and his instinct was just so calm and collected. Yeah, brilliant from him.
Yeah, and Art, to have another homegrown talent in the group, someone, I mean, I don't know how much you want to play stop by, oh, he knows the Arsenal, but he has grown up at the club, hasn't he? I mean, he was a kid when he arrived and we had such high hopes for him. I remember him coming on against Norwich in a League Cup game about, whatever, 5-6 years ago, and he got 2 goals and the whole crowd are singing his name, and we thought the emergence of a genuine talent. And then his career just didn't quite work out. But now he's got a serious chance of playing in major games for the Arsenal.
Yeah, it's quite crazy to think he's already played over 100 games for Arsenal, which I know probably most of those would be off the bench, but it's still, I don't think when you see that stat, you actually comprehend how long he's been in and around the first team. Like you said, it's been 5 years. Now he's 23. And I think you're seeing, as Adrian mentioned, he's just becoming a much more rounded player. And in terms of being homegrown, I think you really see he's from London when you see the way he
Chelsea,
talks.
Wasn't he, as a kid?
Yeah,
he was at Chelsea
yeah, before Arsenal got released, and I think within a week he was at Arsenal.
I spoke to one of the scouts last season in the press box, and he was sort of talking me through it. He said, we couldn't believe it. We knew about Eddie. We just couldn't get our heads around Chelsea were letting him go, and we swooped like straight away.
How old was he at the time?
He was 14.
It's 14, yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So that was a mistake on their part. That's
well,
for
it
sure.
certainly looks that way, and we're all very pleased for him, and it's competition, which is what we're looking for. I mean, there were some other players who played yesterday. Reece Nelson, another one. I mean, we had such high hopes for Reece. In a sense, what happened with Eddie last year, do you think it's shown the way a little bit? You know, you think that someone's almost out the door. And Reece Nelson was on loan, wasn't he, at Feyenoord?
Yeah.
Wasn't he? And then he got this injury. But Mikel Arteta has sort of shown faith with him. And you could see when he came on, he wants him to do well. And he had some confidence. And we know how good he is. Again, it's competition for places.
Yeah, you can definitely see the parallels between Nelson and Nketiah, I think, between last season and this. And just with Nelson, I think it's not just Arteta, who obviously really liked him when he first took the job, started him in his first 2 games, I believe, against Bournemouth and Chelsea over Nicolas Pepe, and also coached him when he was doing his coaching badges as a player. I think the fans really wanted him to do well when he came on as well. There's more of a buzz when he got the ball than anyone when he came on. Obviously, Jesus is a bit of a outlier to that, but I think when he got the ball, that whole West Stand stood up, and you could basically hear them saying, come on, Reece, do something. And I think he really looked bright and sharp on the ball. So it was really encouraging to see, and I think as the coming weeks go on, I'd hopefully expect him to start some of the games in the Europa League and impress, because over the summer it was my understanding that he would get those chances from Arteta, because Arteta still likes him quite a lot. And I think, fingers crossed, he stays fit, and those are where the opportunities will come first, and then you get to see, I guess, the importance of the squad depth for this month, and especially after the World Cup too.
In football, you can never write anybody off. Not anyone as talented as a Reece Nelson or an Eddie Nketiah. Eddie is a great example. So too is William Saliba. He's a player that, let's get this right, that Arteta initially didn't really fancy. And now look where he is. It wasn't long ago we were talking about, you know, he might never play for Arsenal. We're going to shift him on. What about Mo Salah? You know, initially didn't make it really at Chelsea, wasn't it?
Kevin De Bruyne as well, by the way.
Exactly. So it is finding the right manager, the right home, taking your chance at the right time. Yeah, there is still an opportunity for Rhys because there's no doubt he's got the ability. I think half of it is finding the right position for him. I think coming in off the left is his best position personally. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see over the course of the Europa League and probably the Carabao Cup, see if he can deliver. Hope he can.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting one because when I was speaking to him at the back end of last season for an interview before the Conference League final, he said he feels more natural off the left. But he was actually performing really well off the right for Feyenoord at the back end of that year. So I think with however this season develops, the fact that he can do both to a decent level really helps him.
Yeah, and helps us as well. I want to ask you guys, both of you guys, about the Europa League. It obviously isn't the calibre of the competition that you see in the Champions League. And I was watching Milan and Chelsea the other day. And thinking, we're as good as these two teams. We're above Chelsea in the league. Milan are a tasty team, but we have players who, you know, we're I think as good, if not better, than quite a lot of teams in that competition. But we're having to put up with the Europa League. But do you think it is good for this sort of player development? I don't think, Adrian, that Reece Nelson would be getting time off the bench, or Marquinhos or Sambi Lokonga, if we were playing in a Champions League group match.
Completely agree. Yeah, no, it's perfect. It's unbelievably positive news.
Yeah, but is it then actually better that we didn't qualify for the Champions League this year, is my point.
No, I would never say that, because no, we can't clutch at that straw. I mean, I could see you're pretty much just winding me up there.
No. I'm talking about long-term player development.
If
Nketiah and Reece Nelson come through, saves us £100 million in signing some superstar, right?
No, but it's good for them, better for them. But it's clearly better for the club if we're in the Champions League. but look, this time next year, it'll be fine. We'll be there then. And these young players would have had lots and lots of experience, wouldn't they? So no, it is perfect for tuning up the guys that Arteta wants in reserve, because Arteta has probably the most fixed idea on his first 11 of all the managers in the Premier League right now. We could all name it. We all know his best team. So how do you motivate everyone else? How do you keep them interested and on board? Well, the answer is you play them in games like this, and you reward them when they play well in games like this with chances in the Premier League. And we saw that with Marquinhos, and others will get the opportunity as well. So, it's really good for us. And Buda Glimt weren't great. They were terrible in the first half, but in the second half, they gave us a little bit of a fright. And I think the away game might be a really challenging one, actually. They've won 14 European home games in a row, Buda Glimt.
Beat Roma 6-1 last year, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, these are no pushovers.
They don't lose at home. So this particular fixture, I think, will be a genuine test, like a Champions League level test.
Yeah. Fabio Vieira played yesterday, played really well, scored his goal at the end. Lovely bit of work by Jesus, and he finished it. I mean, rapidly we're seeing now, aren't we, what Edu and Arteta and the rest of the scouting team saw in him. I mean, he's going to push Martin Odegaard pretty hard, isn't he? And that, to have competition in that spot is really crucial for us going forward, right?
Yeah, I think what is good is he's slightly different player to Odegaard, whereas Odegaard likes to knit things together and is very considered. I think Vieira is a bit more instinctive, and you see that with how many shots he got off yesterday. And of course, everyone was kind of waiting for him to finally score. But even in his early kind of minutes in an Arsenal shirt, you could see the technique was there. At Bournemouth in that under-21s game, you could see it. And then slowly you get more Premier League, just first team minutes, actually, because his first minutes came in the Europa League. But I think with every game he's played, you can just see how quickly he works. And he's one of those players, similar to Odegaard, who you actually appreciate more when you see them work in the flesh, I feel, because you see how clean and crisp every touch is. And yesterday was just a little glimpse into how he's different from Odegaard, but can still contribute very, very much to the team. And I think that competition will help Arsenal in the long run, because there will probably be games where he's more suited than Ødegaard. But also, you saw they played together yesterday as well. So I'd be interested to see in more testing games where he goes, if Ødegaard comes on the pitch with him, does Ødegaard go into that 10 and then he goes into that kind of Xhaka role? I don't know. But it's definitely an interesting one to kind of work out, which will probably keep opposition teams guessing too.
I think Granit is probably going to play every game from now until he retires, to be honest with you. I
mean, doesn't get nights off, does he? Yeah, it doesn't happen.
It doesn't. No, but he obviously is having a great time and he doesn't need them at the moment. Go on,
yeah.
Adrian.
Yeah, on Vieira, he's more in product than dominant in the ball, isn't he? Yeah. I was looking at it because obviously the thing about Ødegaard, and he's that at the moment, he just give it to me and I'll make things happen. Whereas Vieira doesn't find it as easy to get on the ball. I think Buda Glimt were brilliant at shrinking the space between the lines. So very well coached team. So he struggled to find the space. He only had 16 passes in the game.
Yeah.
But they were completed all. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was a standout of the game. He had 100%. I think Jesus, when he came on, had 100%. Saka had 100%. Xhaka 95%. Tierney 97%. We really didn't give the ball away very, very often. Right. But yeah, Vieira, 5 shots, 3 key passes, but only 16 passes overall. So it's a curious quirk because in that position, you would normally expect and probably demand in a game like that, he has 50 or 60 passes. But maybe that will come in time when he gets a bit more confident.
The Erling Haaland of midfield is what we're going to call him. go on.
It was the same against Brentford because I wrote something on him after that game and he was ranked 9th or 8th for touches by Arsenal players in that game. And then if you look at Ødegaard's ranked around 3rd in the games that he's most influential in. But it kind of reminds me of how Smith Rowe broke into the team, where Smith Rowe was very... The way that I kind of worked it out in my head was low volume but high efficiency. So he spends very little time on the ball, but his touches are very important. So Smith Rowe would play it 1-2 touch and get Arsenal up the pitch really quickly. And I think it's slightly different with Vieira because it's very much end product based, but it's quite a similar thing with him that I kind of see.
There's also been quite a lot of talk this week about contracts, Bukayo Saka's contract talks. Also, there's obviously a lot of chat about William Saliba and Gabriel Martinelli. It doesn't feel like the same sort of panic we felt in the past. I remember when Theo Walcott had us over a barrel with 6 months left in his contract and got an enormous amount of money and then barely scored for us again after that. But it feels different now, Adrian. Do you not think? I mean, this is a different vibe, essentially, is what's going on. And there doesn't seem to be any panic over it.
No, the planning has all come to fruition, hasn't it? Sort of on and off the pitch. Everyone's a bit more settled in their roles. And I think that, we've not had major changes behind the scenes.
Why would you leave Arsenal anyway? I mean, obviously, I'm a fan, right? So I'm asking that question. But even as a player, Adrian, it's going to be hard to find a happier dressing room and a happier training ground than Arsenal at the moment.
I think so. Yeah, no, I do agree with that. We're more appealing than we've been in many, many years, aren't we? And I think everyone is really, really happy. You can see that. But with contracts, you have agents involved and you have agents in the ears of the players.
Boom.
Exactly. And at the moment, the only issue I feel, because I think that they would all sign just like that. If they didn't have agents, they'd just say, give me the pen. Let's do it. But because they've got agents who have business heads, who know it's World Cup year where values and their commodities can increase in value over the course of 1 month, if it's really, really successful, I just sense that agents across the board would be telling their players to wait.
Yeah, don't sign. Have a great World Cup, and then we'll get another 20 grand a week on the contract.
That's what they'll be saying.
P- perfect business sense in a way, but I don't feel any concern. And this is, it's unusual when it comes to our young talent. But do you know what? We should clip this just so when all three leave at the end of the season. We're laughing, but it's not funny.
With these things, though, you might as well strike while everything's rosy and everyone's so happy. So it does make sense to push for it while we're flying, because you know, you are obviously going to be more likely to convince these players to commit long term then. So yeah, I don't feel worried about any of them at the moment, but the issue is if we don't win something this season, then we know that managers like Martinelli, they like Saka. You know, these are two players that are really coveted, Martin Ødegaard as well. So yeah, we've got a lot of valuable players in the eyes of the world's biggest hitters now. So we do have to be wary that it could happen. Yeah, if a Man City come in for a player or a Liverpool, it's not easy to walk away from that. Let's win something this season,
AR. I mean, that's what we need to do, right? Win a trophy, finish in the top four, and then we know we're making progress, right?
Yeah, easy as that.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm saying it, but, you know, we've started pretty well, played 10 games, won 9 of them, probably should have won the other one as well. So we've started pretty well. And obviously, you'd say to Bukayo Saka, don't you want to play with William Saliba? Of course you do. And then say it the other way around as well. And Gabriel Martinelli is the same. I feel confident. I hope you do too, listener. And as we mentioned, Liverpool, we'll get into their visit to the Emirates next. This is Handbrake Off from The Athletic.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Through by Bellerin, turning is Ramsey, rolled in for Sanchez, away from Toure. Sanchez, wonderful! Wonderful, wonderful, what a goal!
Arsenal play Liverpool on Sunday at the Emirates. There's an 11-point gap between the teams. Arsenal are ahead by 11 points. No one saw that coming, right?
It's very, very strange. And I think you see with the arguments throughout the season has been Arsenal have only played easy teams. But I feel like that's such a lazy kind of statement to make, because you see with Liverpool how they've started this season. They've drawn to Fulham. They've drawn to Crystal Palace, who Arsenal have beaten both teams.
Brighton.
Brighton as well. Although Arsenal aren't really, they don't really have the best history against Brighton. But I think you see with Liverpool, no game is really that easy in the Premier League.
Except for Bournemouth.
except for Bournemouth. But I think you...
And Tottenham, obviously.
I think you see you've just got to take your points wherever they come. And going into the weekend, Arsenal obviously in very good momentum. So I'm just hoping that kind of carries through and you see an Arsenal team that are willing to kind of take the game to Liverpool rather than waiting for Liverpool to play. And I think if you think back to the game of the Emirates last season in the Premier League, they played quite well in the first half. It was 0-0 at half time, and there was still kind of belief during half time that something could happen, but then Diogo Jota shows up in the second half and the game's done within 10 minutes. I just hope that they can have another fast start, because they've started games really quickly this year, and just kind of build from there. And hopefully, as you mentioned earlier, Ian, hopefully the crowd kind of takes them on a wave throughout the game.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to fear us, aren't they, Adrian, in a way that perhaps they haven't before. You know that scene in Gladiator where they're in the that sort of moth-eaten gladiatorial arena somewhere in the Middle East. We're not sure where. You know, the first one before remember. He gets to Rome. Remember this?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Russell Crowe walks out, right, and he kills a lot of people. And then the second time he walks out, all the blokes who are there to kill him take a step back, right? Because they respect him, because he's the general at that point. And I feel that Liverpool are going to have the same attitude. When we come out, they're going to just take a step back and go, oh, yeah. This is not a team we can roll over now. If you haven't seen the film, you won't have a clue what I'm talking about there. But listen, it's Gladiator. It's not like some minor art house movie. I did. I think Liverpool fear us and will fear us. And we're going to target Trent, aren't we? Let's be fair.
Well, yeah, I was looking at the goals Liverpool have conceded, and a lot of teams have had success targeting him down that side. 2v1 overloads. And what have Arsenal been doing all season anyway? It's creating overloads, particularly down the left-hand side, where Xhaka and Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus have kind of formed this triangular axis where two of them at any given time are popping up on the fullback and playing around them. So, yeah, in that sense, Liverpool are tailor-made for Arsenal here, but it's not as simple as that. They're a really good team. We have a bad record against them. We haven't scored in our last six meetings with Liverpool, which I've had to double check it numerous occasions.
Really?
Yes. Six matches without a goal against Liverpool. Yeah. And look, this used to be a fixture that was, you know, free scoring. We scored lots, they scored lots. They usually won, but that hasn't been the case of late. So But as you rightly point out, we're in a much better place. They will respect us more. And we're a team on the up. And I see them as a team that are maybe on the slide. And when you think about the age profile of the team, that is probably logical. I was looking at Liverpool. Their 3-3 draw against Brighton, 7 over 30s. The average age was 28 and a half. For us, the average age is 24.3. last weekend, and we have one over 30, and that's Granit Xhaka, who is 30. So we have got a young emerging team. We're basically 5 years behind Liverpool in terms of the profile of our player, and that is a positive, because they're coming to the end of a cycle. They need to regenerate. We're on the up. So I think this is a great clash. I expect goals. I think both teams will probably score. And it could be a bit of a shootout. I really hope we can come out on the right side of that shootout, because the belief it will give the players, if we can beat Liverpool, is frightening.
And, well, beating Tottenham and then beating Liverpool in a week and brushing aside Bode Glimt, I know it wasn't an easy game, but you know, with most of our reserve team, that is a real statement. I mean, Amy talked last week about William Saliba. I mean, the guy's played, well, I don't know, 8 games or something for us. It is a bit ridiculous. But some people are talking about this sort of Van Dijk effect that he had. I can see your face when I'm saying this. I'm just talking. I mean, look, it doesn't make any difference to William. He doesn't listen to us and go, I am Virgil van Dijk, right? He doesn't. So we're free to say what we want. And what we see is William Saliba at the back, and he's got that sorted in the same way that Van Dijk had in those early days for Liverpool.
He's unbelievably composed, both with and without the ball. And I think that's probably where those comparisons come from. But I see him as someone who just lets Arsenal play the way Mikel Arteta wants them to play in all aspects of the game. You saw that moment in the Tottenham game where I think it's Son and Richarlison are pressing him inside the Arsenal box and he just spins away. I was actually watching the game with a friend who hadn't watched William Saliba play yet, and he was I was about to swear. I don't know if we're allowed to swear. but he was very scared in that moment because he hadn't been exposed to what Saliba can do. And obviously, over time, I guess we've become accustomed to that, his just spinning away from pressure and being able to kind of see what's going on. But yeah, I think going into the Liverpool game, it will be really interesting to see, one, how high they still defend, and two, how he deals with those kind of pressure situations inside the box, which I think he will do well. And hopefully he just continues that momentum throughout, obviously, the game itself and then in the weeks to come too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Klopp goes with a front two again, because he did in the Champions League. I don't know if you saw this, Tony, against Rangers. He kind of went 4-4-2 with Nunez and Jota. It's annoying for us that Jota's fit again because he loves scoring against us. But with Salah and Luis Diaz as the wingers. Now, in one sense, that's a bit scary because two strikers occupying our centre-halves creates unbelievable pressure on them. And the way we defend, with the sort of fullbacks pushed on but quite central, leaves space naturally down the sides. And whether that's Salah, Diaz or one of the forwards spinning into it on those counters, I think Liverpool could have joy. Flip it around though, if they go 4-4-2, our midfield should absolutely dominate because they'll have two in there. We'll have Partey, Zinchenko, Xhaka and Ødegaard effectively on a 4v2.
I don't think.
And you know what happens then? Yeah, exactly. I don't think they will, but they could. And if that happens, defenders will get drawn towards Xhaka and Ødegaard, which leaves space for us to exploit. So it will be fascinating because Klopp has made quite a big deal about changing that structure. So yeah, it's fascinating to see if he's brave enough to do it against informed Arsenal. I personally hope he does, because I think it will make for a great game and a really interesting tactical one.
And just on Saliba, one more thing, because, you know, we've all sort of said, oh, he's such a young guy and he's going to make mistakes. We shouldn't forget, he already made one against Fulham. He scored an own goal. And the crowd's reaction, I mean, I've never really seen anything quite like that. I think people were a little bit taken aback by the level of support and the level of it's okay. It was like a 60,000 people giving him a collective hug, really, genuinely. And I think that has made him step up even more. I think he knows that we've got his back. And so we have talked quite a lot about the crowd on this podcast. And it does feel great, does it not, Art, to feel collectively part of this whole process, really? I mean, we are playing our part, are we not?
Yeah, that was against Leicester, actually, not Fulham.
Sorry.
I think that moment was very weird in a good way because it almost seemed like everyone knew what to do. and for that to happen with 60,000 people, I don't think that will happen again. And it was very unique because I think just the day before, Arteta had spoken about having to protect Saliba when things go wrong. And it just so happened that the next day, something went wrong and everyone kind of gave him that collective hug, as you're talking about, Ian. And I think just, you saw slowly last season the atmosphere got really, really good, second half of the year in particular. And it's obviously been helped this year by the Ashburn Army in the clock end. But I think the big games is where you really see it, because you just see how up for it everyone is. And it now feels like every game means something again. Whereas I think if you rewound just before the pandemic hit, I think there wasn't really that sense of every game meaning something. And it was almost just a sense of apathy, really.
How many times does a player, because in the past, with late Wenger era or during bad times under Unai or whatnot, early Arteta, one mistake by any player was seized on. And it was like, you're rubbish. You know, you could just hear it. You could hear the groans. It feels like this, that now anyone can do anything in terms of making a mistake and they'll still get support because there's so much good faith in the bank. It feels like you can almost make three or four mistakes before the fans will start to get disgruntled. And that's a lovely place to be.
But Adrian, yeah, surely as a player, I mean, we were talking earlier about Saka and Martinelli and Saliba not having signed contracts. And one of the things that would make you sign a contract, you'd think, oh my God, there's 60,000 people plus all the others lot who genuinely love me and love what I do and are prepared to let me express myself, even though things might not work out. And I mean, that's a very, very compelling case for staying.
Very compelling. Very, very compelling. Players have signed for clubs like Liverpool in the past because of the fans, because of, you know, those big nights where it's great atmospheres. And now Arsenal are putting themselves in a position where players are wanting to be part of the whole, you know, the whole party. You know, it's some turnaround.
It really is some turnaround given,
you know, probably a year ago, just over a year ago now, it was not a nice place to go and play football. It was a pressure cooker situation. So, yeah, no, let's just keep it as it is, please. It's great.
What we're looking for, special European nights at the Emirates, all right? Now, people will talk about this for years to come, right? Like Anfield, only it's different now. Yeah, the Emirates. Nobody ever wins at the Emirates. Let's have a song to finish. Adrian, what have you got for us?
Yeah, all right. Don't laugh before I start.
I'm not laughing.
You know it's not going to be obscure. You know you're going to know it. I had contracts in my head when I was thinking about a song here with Saka and Saliba and co. So I've got a bit of a classic by Al Green. Let's Stay Together.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a beaut.
Marvellous song. Art, what have you got?
I've taken a leaf out of Adrian's book and gone, well, this is from a few months ago. He went Katy Perry. So I'm going very early 2010s pop as well. Inspired by Eddie Nketiah scoring yesterday, Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah, nice. I like that song.
I actually like that song too. This is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe. All right, I'm having Groovy Train. But is it The Farm? Is it The Farm who did that? Adrian, you're so special. Get on.
Oh yeah, it's a
get
good
on
song,
my
yeah.
Groovy Train.
Yeah.
Anyway, that song. Because and that's really talking about the people who might be holding out for contracts. Get on the Groovy Train.
Yeah, that's good. Three good choices there. Yeah.
That's what we've got at the Emirates at the moment. That's it. Enjoy the game, Sunday. I'm sure you all will. Thanks to Art. Thanks to Adrian. Thanks to Guy, our producer this week. And have a nice day, listener. I'm Ian Stone. This has been Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. See ya.